Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Jake Jacobson. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, September 16th, 2019. Coming up in today's program, WFHB correspondent Michael Glab speaks with local activists who want to make their community a better place on today's edition of Big Talk Extra with Michael Glab. Also coming up in the next half hour, Chris Jackson talks about volunteering with the City of Bloomington's Council for Community Accessibility on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, your daily headlines. On Monday, September 23rd, a Taiwanese delegation visited Indiana as part of a multi-state agricultural trade goodwill mission. To kick off their visit, representatives from both states participated in a letter of intent signing ceremony at the Indiana State House, where the Taiwan Vegetable Oil Manufacturers Association made a pledge to purchase a significant amount of soybeans from Indiana farmers. Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch and representatives of the Indiana Soybean Alliance were also in attendance. The Richland Bean Blossom Community School District will be holding their 2020 budget hearing this evening, where they will be asking for slightly less money than they received in 2019. The total amount requested is just over $28 million. While this year's budget isn't much different from last year's, there is a difference in how the school corporation will allocate its money. In accordance with a new state law that took effect on January 1st of this year, school systems must divide the money into three funds: an education fund, an operations fund, and a debt service fund. RBB is looking to allocate roughly $15 million to its education fund, which pays for salaries and benefits, nearly $6 million to its debt service fund. $7 million is to be allocated for operations, including expanding the bus parking lot and building upgrades, among other things. Just under a $500,000 of the operations fund will be allocated for the district's five-year school bus replacement plan. The hearing will be held at 6:30 this evening at Edgewood High School in Ellettsville in classroom 115A. This Friday, September 20th, students around the country will be on strike, demanding action on climate change from their local elected officials. Bloomington is just one of many cities across the country where students will take to the streets. Students will begin walking out of classrooms at 11:30 and meet in Dunmeadow at IU. From there, the demonstrators will march to City Hall, where they will present their demands to Mayor John Hamilton. These demands include committing to and developing a concrete plan to get Bloomington to net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2040, achieve 60% tree coverage, and expand funding for sustainable housing, transit, and the local food economy. The event is organized by Sunrise Movement and Extinction Rebellion, both large organizations with local chapters in Bloomington. More information about the strike can be found at globalclimatestrike.net and sunrisemovement.org. You can also view a list of their demands on our website. The Bloomington Planning and Transportation Department will be holding a public meeting to discuss extending the Beeline Trail on Fountain Drive and Crescent Road. They're looking for input from nearby residents, as well as any other members of the public. This project includes an extension from North Adams Street to West Fountain Drive, as well as a new multi-use path from that extension along West Fountain Drive to North Crescent Road, then north to West 17th Street. The intersection at West Fountain Drive and North Crescent Road will also be reconstructed. The meeting will be held on Wednesday, September 18th at 6 p.m. in the atrium of City Hall. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Jake Jacobson. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com. we'll hear an excerpt of conversations between Big Talk's Michael Glab and local advocates Dr. Rob Stone, Deborah Morrow, and Courtney Payne Taylor.
Hi, this is Big Talk, Michael Glab here. Bloomington is home to countless people who give their time and energy to organizations that they feel will make the world a better place. We've hosted many such people on Big Talk. Today, let's go to the archives for a few snippets of conversation with people working to bring change in South Central Indiana. Dr. Rob Stone joined us in August. He's the director and founder of Medicare for All Indiana. He's on the Board of Advisors for Physicians for a National Health Plan. He spent nearly 30 years practicing emergency medicine at Bloomington Hospital. He calls himself a passionate advocate for universal health care. Rob was a friend of Dr. Quentin Young, Martin Luther King Jr.'s personal physician and an early advocate for universal health care. Doing so much, trying to tear down to an extent, some systems that really don't serve us well.
Mm-hmm.
How near are we to universal health care?
Okay. Great question, which I can only say relatively. I don't know how we're going to get from where we are now to where I think we need to be.
Yeah.
But the fact that, for instance, in the recent Democratic presidential primary debates, every candidate is saying something about universal health care, and we often speak of it as Medicare for All, meaning that we've got a program now, Medicare, that's been around since 1965.
And apparently it works.
And it works really well. And it is a universal program once you turn 65. It doesn't matter, you know, what your pre-existing conditions are. You are covered by Medicare at age 65. And there's some other groups beyond age 65, like kidney dialysis, that are covered by Medicare. But Medicare covers everybody age 65. It's been in place for over 50 years. It's a popular program. We're already taking care of the sickest, most complicated, most expensive patients. We're already doing it, and we're doing it well. And we look around the world, and we see in Europe, in Canada, in Australia, and New Zealand, we see other Japan, countries that are covering everybody, not just at age 65 on, but all the way through life. So we know it can be done. We know these other countries spend less than we do. I mean, I could go on and on, but I'll try to reel myself in terms of why it's a good idea to cover everybody, both economically and morally. And so now people are talking about it. Yes, Medicare for All, Medicare at birth rather than age 65, and it's being talked about more than ever. So in that sense, there's been tremendous progress. This idea is gone from being a totally fringe idea to being an idea that is talked about, although labeled as still some kind of far left, and maybe this word socialist comes into play.
Big government, yeah.
Big government. So I don't know how this is going to play out, but we are closer than we've ever been. I actually see that it's inevitable, because based on the international data, we know this is it's not only the right thing to do, it's the only affordable way to take care of people and have a healthy population who are good workers and healthy participants in democracy. Health is important to everything. So it's inevitable. We're going to get there. It's just a question of how and when, and then what's the strategy to really get there, and that's where it gets really complicated.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Let me reel you in.
Okay.
Here.
All right. Just try to reel me in.
Just because something makes sense doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Exactly.
You know as well as I do that crazy things are enacted.
Yep.
Or not enacted.
Yep. Yep.
Do you ever feel pessimistic about it?
Quentin Young once told me what he wanted on his grave was the inscription on his grave to be, "Here lies a dangerous optimist." I don't know if that's
the worst kind of optimist. Yeah.
He ended up getting buried in California, and I don't know what's on his grave, but that's what he told me he wanted his inscription to be. So, I get discouraged.
Yeah.
But it's a good thing to work for.
Yeah.
And I am passionate about it. I love working. I love talking to people. I love meeting people all over the country who are just amazing people doing this work. Just like meeting Quentin Young, that was a thrill to my heart and my bones to meet him and actually become a friend of his.
I assume you've made a living throughout your life. I assume you've got a dollar or two in the bank.
Yeah, I've done well.
Okay. Under universal health care, will doctors be able to make a living?
Well, I think there's no question about that.
We were joined in November 2018 by Deborah Morrow, Executive Director of Middleway House, a safe haven for women and men who've experienced domestic violence. Middleway House also provides housing, daycare, job training, and other services needed for people to re-enter society and the workforce. Morrow herself came to Middleway House as a client. Over the years, she developed skills and the confidence to eventually take over the reins of the organization. Now, the community donates a lot of money.
Oh, my gosh. The community is wonderful. We could not do the work we do without the community. We absolutely could not. I don't know whether sometimes people realize the many opportunities for volunteering. Even all of our tree sweaters around town were made by volunteers and hung and are taken care of by volunteers. And volunteers work in every part of our agency. From our crisis line to our on-scene advocates who go to the hospital with somebody who's experienced domestic abuse or sexual assault, our youth program, our daycare, volunteers are in all parts of our organization, and there's actually volunteer hours available 24 hours a day.
Middleway House has been around for nearly 50 years. 1971, I believe it was founded, and at that time it had a different purpose.
I love the story about how Middleway House started. We started out as a crisis line, and it was a group of students who got together, and they helped out with general crisis on the crisis line and also venereal disease questions and things like that. But one of the favorite things is that there was a bunch of them were chemistry students. What they would allow people to do is to bring in drugs, 71. There was a lot of drug usage. They would allow people to bring their drugs in. They would actually test the substances and give it back to them and let them decide whether or not they wanted to use it once they heard the information of what was in the drugs and what the drugs would do with them. So
this is the junk that's in the junk.
Yeah. And to me, that is so much the same philosophy we operate with today. People come to us. Now, we don't want anybody bringing drugs to us.
Right.
People come to us. They give us their stuff, their emotional stuff, the stuff they're experiencing. We look at it. And we kind of give it back to them with resources and information and let them make their own decisions because everybody's an expert on their own life. So really what we're doing is the same thing. We're just letting them bring their problems to us, their relationship problems, their situations they're experiencing, and we give them back information and resources. We'll never tell anybody they have to leave an abusive relationship. We will never. We know that leaving
You don't shake your finger.
Oh, my gosh, no. We know that leaving is the most dangerous time. We know that the person that's telling us their story knows their abuser better than we do. And we also know that it takes 7 to 9 times before somebody is actually ready to leave an abuser. And we never want them to think, well, I can't go back to them. They told me to leave and I didn't leave and they're going to tell me, well, why didn't you do what we told you the first time? We don't ever want anybody to feel that way.
You have to work hand in hand in a lot of ways with hospitals, with the police, with the sheriff. All these people are willing helpers, partners.
Yeah, we try to maintain good working relationships with all of them. It's in the best interest of the survivors. We want to make sure that every option is available for every survivor that comes to us. So having good relationships with all of these different agencies are important. And what I find is all of them are very interested in helping survivors of domestic violence.
Finally, we met Courtney Payne Taylor on Big Talk 2 weeks ago. She didn't know what to do with her life and had been experiencing depression because of it. One day she found herself at Upper Cascades Park, where a visiting pro taught her how to ride a skateboard. She's been hooked ever since. She derived pleasure and satisfaction from riding and wanted to bring the same to girls and women far and wide. She started GROW, Girls Riders Organization, hoping to share the lessons of skateboarding as a metaphor for success in life. When I go to the GROW website, the thing that really catches my eye, 4 big lessons. Can I name the first one?
Yes, please.
All right. There is a place for you, and you deserve to be there as much as anyone else. Why is that number one?
Again, I think there's just like someone coming up to a skate park, seeing all these advanced skaters and believing that you would be in their way. You're not welcome there because you're not good enough to be there. Well, they all got good by being there. And I think everything in life, whether especially with women going into careers that are traditionally male dominated, we need to know that everyone has equal rights to be there. Don't be afraid to step into a field because you seem like the only one or part of the minority. Everybody has a right to do everything in life, whether it's being in a location or whether it's being in a career or whether it's a certain passion. I think we have to stop limiting ourselves before we even take that first step.
Do you think that a woman in today's world has to be tougher than a man?
We don't need to be anything other than who we are. We need to create our own world within the world. I think in the beginning of skateboarding, girls all looked like boys. They dressed like the boys. They cut their hair like the boys. They tried to fit in with the boys. But girls' skateboarding didn't start growing until girls started being girls on skateboards and letting the world of girls' skateboarding start growing. And I think that's what matters. We don't need to fit into the mold that's been there. We need to help develop our own space.
So what are some of the visual cues? Would it be fashion? Would it be colors? Would it be different looks of the skateboard that would distinguish girls from boys?
Again, you can be whoever you want. So there's a group out in California called the Pink Helmet Posse. And these girls have some videos where they start doing manicures on their nails and then they go skate. They'll wear tutus, they wear dresses. I mean, you can be whoever you want. You don't have to be a girl or dress like a girl or act like a girl. You be whoever you want to be and you can still be a skateboarder.
Lesson number two, first, observe what is happening and then find your place to begin.
When a girl shows up at a skate park and there's all these skaters there, she says, I can't get in there. I teach them, watch for a minute, because you're going to see these skateboarders, they're repetitive. They are going to do the same thing over and over. And if you watch for a few minutes, you're going to find there's one place in the park no one else is, and that's your place. Go start there. Now, you have a problem because you're a girl and you're skateboarding, which makes you cool. So you're going to notice they're going to flock to that spot that you're at. But as they flock to that spot, they're leaving other spots open. So you always can find your place to get started. You don't have to always start in the mainstream.
Lesson number three, pay attention to the changes and always be ready to move on to the next place.
In skateboarding, if you're going to go down a hill or you're going to go up a hill, you're going to go off the sidewalk into the street, you always need to be aware. I think when we get into a pattern of doing the same thing every day and the same thought processes every day, we're always going to continue on this path and then life changes. And if you're not paying attention to that, it's going to end up hurting you.
Lesson number four, 2 words, help others.
Helping others, I think, is so important. I mean, when people help us, they change our lives and we can turn around and do that for other people. And GROW, we always not only teach girls to skate, but we teach girls the tools they need to help someone else learn that as well. When we all help one another, I mean, everything just goes better. And it's not just girls helping girls or guys helping guys. This goes across. I mean, I've had people help me that never be expected. You know, much older men in the industry that helped me out that they had no reason to. I was some young girl. Why did they help me? Well, I don't know why, but their helping me made such a big difference. I think, again, it goes, it's all about that community. We live in a better community when we live in a community that helps one another.
I hope these stories have inspired you to go out and do some good work for the community and for the world. Look around. See which organizations might fit your passion or start your own group. Thanks for listening.
You just heard an excerpt from Big Talk with Michael Glab. Full episodes of Big Talk air Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. right here on WFHB. You can also find archived episodes of Big Talk on our website, wfhb.org. Support for WFHB comes from Lauren Wood Builders. Lauren Wood Builders is a family-owned company that sources local materials and local craftsmen to minimize environmental impact and sustain community. More information is available online at laurenwoodbuilders.com. Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring audio profiles of local volunteers who stand up for what they believe in, spark change, and create meaningful impact in our community. We invite you to get to know some of these volunteers through their inspiring stories of service.
Hi, my name is Chris Jackson, and I volunteer with the Council for Community Accessibility and chair the Accessibility Subcommittee of the Council. I first joined up with the CCA sort of as an outgrowth of my day job, which is doing community outreach at Monroe County Public Library. I knew about the CCA, and we'd had some accessibility issues at the library that we wanted help with. So I joined as the new chair to the Accessibility Committee. It's been incredibly inspiring to me because it can be really difficult to talk about disability. It's an awkward topic to bring up in a casual setting. So it's great to have an environment where we focus on nothing but talking about disability and accessibility. They have a long track record of making a significant difference in the community. What we do specifically in our subcommittee is go to businesses and service providers with a tape measure and a checklist and really measure the basics of access from parking and whether the parking places are accessible to how you get from parking to the front door, whether the service counters are accessible, whether somebody using a wheelchair can navigate through a business space, can use the restroom. And so we've made a difference at a huge number of local businesses. I will mention one very recent thing we did over the summer. We had a parent who a parent of students in the Monroe County Community School Corporation. She uses a wheelchair and had some access issues in attending functions at her kid's school. She brought it to our attention. We approached the school corporation with the idea of surveying all the schools that are in Bloomington in Monroe County Community School Corporation, which they very eagerly accepted. So we surveyed, I believe, 18 different locations this summer. We actually found access barriers in each and every one of them. Many of those were very minor, and we just heard back that they are addressing almost all of them in immediate work plans. So the schools that had access barriers to perhaps a parent or a prospective student or anyone using a mobility device will become more accessible as a result of our work. That's 18 locations that I expect to be radically changed for some individuals over the next 6 to 9 months. I think Bloomington is a town that really does value inclusivity. And a lot of people honestly state that that's an important value. A lot of businesses say that. And yet there are barriers all around that really prevent us being as inclusive as we should be. You know, when people stop being a part of going out and being a part of the community, that isolating impact has a real impact on people's health. We really want people to be involved to enrich all of the services that we provide and to enrich their lives as well. We know we're making that difference with the CCA. It's very satisfying to be working on disability and accessibility issues because we do hear about the significant difference it makes. Current statistics are about that 1 in 5 people in the United States have a disability of some sort. So it's a huge segment of the population. Disability is a spectrum, and some of us are on the disability spectrum from birth with one or sometimes multiple disabilities. All of us will experience, or virtually all of us will experience disability at some point in our lives, more likely as we get older. And the changes that we're advocating for really are a benefit to everyone. So if anyone's interested in learning more about the Council for Community Accessibility, I would encourage you to come to one of our meetings. We generally meet the last Monday of the month at 4 o'clock in the first floor McCloskey Room at City Hall. To become active in the council, really all you need to do is show up. All of us who participate are volunteers, and there's lots of work to be done in making Bloomington more accessible for everyone. Thanks for listening. My name is Chris Jackson, and I am with the Council for Community Accessibility here in Bloomington, Indiana.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to inspire, engage, and connect individuals to their community. Listen to episodes of Activate online at WFHB.org. You can read more about the profile, see photos, and connect to featured organizations and causes. And visit BloomingtonVolunteerNetwork.org to discover even more opportunities to serve, give, and advocate. Get inspired. Inspire others. Activate in your community. For WFHB Community Radio and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shaik.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News, a production of WFHB Community Radio. For WFHB, I'm Jake Jacobson.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.